Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I'm in charge of the meal today, Mum. How are you?
Fine, darling.
I'm actually doing quite good innings in this series.
Yeah, you are.
Particularly with breakfasts.
Yeah, you're good at breakfast, darling.
How are you, Mum?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm okay. Got back from Portofino.
How was your luxury trip?
I mean, you know, it was work. But
yeah,
with a bit
darling,
of luxury.
It was a bit of work and a lot of luxury.
Yeah, it was luxurious, to be honest. And it was. I ate very, very good food. I drank the greatest Negroni of my life. Unfortunately, I had to drink it before I had to do a gig that night, so I couldn't have another one. But Paolo in Portofino, Splendido Mare, go and have Paolo's Negroni. It will change your life. So I'm on food duty today, and inspired by my Italian getaway, I have decided to do, well, actually also inspired by somebody that you're all probably knowing about now, because I always look on his Instagram. I only get my recipes from Instagram now, I've decided. Good old Ed Smith, Rocket and Squash on Instagram. His Saturday eggs that he always offers. He did one the other day. I was in Italy at the same time. I thought, well, why not bring it back for a Tuesday podcast? It was folded eggs with slow roasted tomatoes and parmesan. So I've got Isle of Wight tomatoes that I've shoved in, all different colours, put it in low oven with some salt and olive oil and some oregano from the garden. That's been going on whilst I've been taking the kids to school. Folded eggs, I think, potentially could be awful, but...
Why are they called folded eggs?
Because they're not scrambled and they're not a omelette.
Oh, so it's folded like Schitt's Creek folded. Did you fold it like paper? Or did you just fold it?
I don't know if it's even going to be folded at all. Or just pushed around a bit. Anyway, then with some parmesan on top, bit of rocket on the side with some lemon juice, some sourdough bread, toast. You've brought some pastries from Ayres in Nunhead, which we love. And we have Andrew Ridgely on. One of the members of Wham, who have got the most charming...
Can't we give people a clue before they do that?
Well, they're going to be... Woo! Yeah, Wham, Bam, thank you, Andrew Ridgely.
You probably know all their songs because I was playing them when I was pregnant with you.
Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Yeah.
Young Guns. Wham Rap.
Club Tropicana.
Drinks are free. Last Christmas. Careless Whisper. Andrew Ridgely, who was a member of Wham with George Michael, is coming over to talk about
that fantastic
documentary. Yeah. That's on Netflix. It was very much done like the Supersonic Oasis one, where there's no seated interviews face on. It's taken from many different interviews from George Michael, of course, because he's no longer with us. And then Andrew also speaking over it. So it's just really, you're in it. You feel like you're having a conversation with them and it's really action-packed. Also, God bless Andrew Ridgely's mum who made scrapbooks. So there's so much amazing content in it, memorabilia, cuttings, all of it. It was a real insight into the journey of Wham, which was actually quite short-lived.
But did they live?
Did they live?
4 years of fun.
And just a friendship that started at such a young age and carried on and just was just so brilliant. Andrew Ridgely coming up on Table Manners. Welcome, Andrew Ridgely. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We met.
Both of you.
We're all friends now. We met in
bosom buddies.
But it's funny. We met very early in the morning on Radio 2, and had loads of fun with Zoe Ball.
Yeah, well, she is.
She's
great,
just amazing.
She? I mean, brilliant broadcaster and so warm and funny.
Massive Wham fan too. That helps.
Does help.
Loves the Shuttlecocks.
Who isn't?
Yeah, well, actually, I don't. I feel like you're about to get a load more Wham fans from this documentary. I watched it. It's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that Chris Smith, the director, really has come as close as anyone, I think, to sort of identifying what made Wham slightly sort of unique and its attraction to people, which I think essentially was, you know, people could see the fact that Jörg and I were extremely close, and I think that has an attraction in itself. So
I thought it was about friendship as much as music, and loyalty and love for each other and promoting each other. I mean, I've found it really wonderful.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you saw it in those terms, because I know that that's exactly what Chris was trying to convey, was the essence of what Wham was all about. And that was it, really. You know, Wham kind of evolved, was just a development of our friendship insofar as, you know, we'd had the school band and then we continued writing songs together because we couldn't see any other way. We didn't have any more friends that played instruments, so we they'd left the school band, and so it was, you know, it was just the songs were our comments on our experience. So Wham Rap Club Trop, Careless Whisper, which were the first three that we wrote.
My God, how young were you when you wrote those? You were teenagers.
We were 18. When
but
we
that's just, I feel, I think what for me I got from the documentary, apart from the beautiful friendship, and also realizing that you're dead cool, Andrew. And you are like, I don't know, like, I think
I thought you were dead cheeky.
So cheeky. Yeah. But yeah, I just think that it's amazing. I mean, the idea that you wrote those songs when you were, maybe the naivety was part of it as well, that you didn't have people, record execs in your ears and things like that. So there was just freedom.
Yeah, we did. We were fortunate in many ways. We weren't A&R'd. Mark Dean, who signed us, who was a friend of mine. He was part of a social circle.
Mark Dean, who, if people haven't seen the documentary, signed you in a greasy spoon.
Yeah, Mark Dean was an extremely good A&R man, and he'd had a hand, I think, in signing ABC. And I think perhaps Soft Cell. Mm. He'd been at Phonogram or Polydor, can never remember, one of the P's. And he lived down the road. Mm. He'd been to the same college, sixth form college, as I was at. And we had a mutual friend, Mark Chivers, who they had a sort of post-punk band. This was 78, 79, called The Quiffs in Bushy. And yeah, and they were proper punk, but they were a bit after the fact. So they whilst they gigged around town, but they never got a gig. Mark Chivers, Pete O'Sullivan, Angus McLean. They never had a drummer. George actually famously
drummed for them.
No, he auditioned
and didn't get
the
gig. Oh
my God.
He auditioned, but he didn't, his image didn't really fit.
He wasn't punky enough.
Well,
or his quiff wasn't big enough.
He had neither. He didn't have a quiff, and they didn't have quiffs. But
had big hair.
He had these great
big
glasses at the time.
Big hair as well. You had a fabulous.
There was a moment where you had a kind of mullet blowout. It was quite a look.
It was. I was trying to grow long hair. This was about 84, and it was unsuccessful.
It just went outwards in a variety of ways. That's like your brother. He can't grow it long. It just goes that way.
Yeah, it did bush out a bit. It was a. What was funny about that? One of the things, many things. That was funny about my trying to grow long hair was it continued through our trip to China, and then I realised that actually it wasn't successful. It wasn't going to be a John Taylor long mane. And so I had it shorn off. And when we got back to the UK after the trip to China, George decided we needed to re-record some of the stage footage. And I had to have a wig made.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
So in the video for Freedom, I am wearing a wig.
Wow, have you still got the wig?
No, the wig was used for fancy dress and no longer exists.
I mean,
disintegrated.
Your mum's scrapbooks. puts any
fabulous
Jewish pushy mother to shame, I tell you. Mum, how many scrapbooks? Like 40?
40 plus. 51, I think.
They're just amazing. But, okay, you've just come here on the bus.
Yes.
I didn't think a member of Wham was going to get the bus down to New Cross Gate garage, like bus garage.
Dead easy.
I like you even more. I like you even more. The Wham, I'm like, you're cheeky, you're health conscious. You get the bus. I don't get the bus that much.
Yeah, I get the bus all the time. I like the number 9 is my favourite.
Where does it start and where does it end?
Number 9 goes from Fulham Broadway to, I think it goes to Aldwych. Yeah, I think that's where it ends up. But it was one of the first of the new Routemaster buses when you used to be able to get on the back as well, yeah. Which for health and safety you can't do anymore.
It used to be fun, that, when
you
jump
on, wouldn't it? Yeah. It's great. Tom, my stepson, who was married at the weekend, we had, between the wedding and the reception, we had an open-top bus tour in the old Routemaster, which has the little space for the ticket collector to stand. It's a sort of cubby hole that you know, the head height that you stand in with the... Unfortunately, there was no ticket machine, so I couldn't...
Tell us a bit about... You grew up, and I was interested in your dad's Egyptian.
Well, Dad was part Egyptian.
Part Egyptian.
Yeah, his mum was Italian. His dad was... I'm never quite sure whether they were Yemeni or Egyptian of Yemeni extraction. They were certainly... I think they had... As I understand it, the family on my father's side, on his father's side, had come to Egypt from the Yemen. And they were Arab Jews, and my dad's mum was an Italian Jew.
How did you get that surname, Richley? Sounds so British.
Yeah, well, he grew up in Alexandria and was sent to a British public school. And the family were expelled during the Suez Crisis at 24 hours' notice, and they were given choices of where to be sent to, as it were. Some went to Israel, some went to France, and my dad, I think, he was already in the... He may have already been in the RAF at that time, because being a British subject, I think he had to do national service. So he came to England, and the family name was Zachariah, which I wish he hadn't changed, because I'd have been the last on the register when the names were called out.
Why would that be good?
Well, it'd be AZ, wouldn't it? Andrew Zachariah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough.
So
you could be first or last, really, in different situations.
Yeah, first and last, which I probably have been on many occasions. So he was around. It was south. It was Richmond Way, and he was on a bus, and he saw a road called Ridgely Gardens or something like that. And he chose that as our family name, which I have to say I think benefited us growing up, because
people don't know who you are.
Well, we were English.
You're more anonymous, yeah.
Well, we were just English, you know, and I grew up feeling thoroughly English. Whereas I think for Jörg, being Yorgos Panartu, it was always a juxtaposition. His name and his sense of being an English kid in an English school with a name that wasn't English. I think that would create some difficulty for him. You know, I don't think you ever really know quite, you know, where you stand because of that.
I think that's true of lots of children of immigrant families, that you're not sure where your foot is.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah, well, I think Dad did me a favour, both myself, my brother and I, in that sense. I really
do. So you've got an older or a younger brother?
Younger. Yeah.
So do you think that maybe... I know that you talked about in the documentary that he was the new kid and they said, who's going to look after him? Do you think that maybe pulled you towards feeling like you wanted to be... Or was it just chance that you were sat next to each other?
No, it was... he was brought in by our form tutor, and the form tutor asked, you know, who was going to look after the new boy. And I'd never had a new boy delivered onto me before, so I put my hand up.
Did you practice any Judaism? Like, did you have any Jewish?
No, my dad was an atheist.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah. And where's your mum from?
Mum was English. She grew up in Twickenham, Scottish and English are her roots. So,
what do you think you are? How would you?
I'm English.
So you're English, okay.
Thoroughly English. I like 2 cups of Imperial Earl Grey tea, black, in the morning.
Okay.
2 pieces of toast, cold, thin, 1 butter, a little bit of salt, the other Frank Cooper's.
You're sounding like a bit of a kind of American psycho. This is quite kind of... Carry on.
Frank Cooper's which marmalade?
Oxford.
It's a bit of Kathy Bates' Misery too. I'm not sure this is... Okay.
No, but I'm...
Does it have to be at a certain angle, the knife, as well, Andrew?
Well...
Is this okay? You okay, I'm now precise. Terrified about cooking for you, but carry on.
There's symmetry in
how
your
thick
life.
How thick is the butter on the toast?
Thinnish, actually. I like proper butter. There's some very good Cornish butter that is made, which I can get when I'm back up.
Or the French salty Cornwall. Butter.
None of that.
No.
Up, no.
Oh, gosh.
I was about to offer you the French salty butter, but I will put it back in the fridge. Okay, so that's what you have every morning.
Yes.
So we're cooking for you.
If I'm, on my tod, that's what I like.
Have you eaten a bit this morning?
Yeah.
So you've had your toast?
Yeah, I mean, when I say thin, I mean almost Melba.
Yeah, let's talk about this precision, Andrew, because word on the street is you're a perfectionist when it comes to being in the kitchen.
I think that's probably fairly close to the truth.
Throwing a whole bowl of fresh pasta out if you've cooked it for 30 seconds too long, I've heard.
That did happen on one occasion, yes. Yeah, I'm very particular about how pasta is cooked. I don't actually cook from these days because I can't see the point in cooking for one. But when Kara and I were living together, I did most of the cooking. She is an outstanding cook. She can cook anything from anything.
Now, this is Karen of Bananarama, who you went out with for a very long time.
We did step out for a considerable amount
of time. Did you meet on the Band-Aid song?
No. No, we knew each other sort of from mutual friends from the mid-80s.
Okay.
And then our relationship sort of started in 90.
And she's an amazing cook.
Yes, she is. Yeah, she can cook from sort of anything. I religiously followed recipes until I sort of got to a point where I could. My pièce de résistance is saffron risotto with a pork and fennel salsiccia and a red wine tomato reduction.
That sounds delicious.
It is. It is exceptionally good. I had it at a hotel in Chavinia, and the... funny enough, the hotel owner was that year's president of the Relais and Chateau, and food was outstanding. We were served this dish on one evening, and I asked the chef if I can have the recipe, and he gave me the recipe, and I put it somewhere safe and couldn't find it for years. I was cooking this thing, and it was never quite right. And I knew that there was a missing ingredient. And the missing ingredient was there was a glass of white wine as well as red wine in the reduction. So that makes all the difference.
So do you like food? Or you're a foodie? Yeah.
Ooh, I like food a lot.
So do you like Italian food or do you like...
I like all food. There's nothing... apart from oysters, which I can't really eat anymore because I've had one too many...
Bad times.
Holy smoke. End of the world, Armageddon type events. there's nothing I won't eat. I'll eat tripe, offal.
But you have a house in Cornwall, don't you? Or you used
yeah.
to?
Yeah.
So you've obviously eaten so well there too, I believe.
Yeah, there are some.
Where are some of your favourite spots in Cornwall?
Oh well, number 6 would be my favourite.
That's
restaurant.
The one where I follow the pastry
Chris
chef.
Chris McClurg.
Well,
yeah.
I'm desperate to go there, and it's Paul's Ainsworth.
Paul Ainsworth. Yeah.
Whereabouts is it?
It's in Cornwall.
It's in Padstow. Okay, yeah. So that's like the food.
But you
food.
Can't get in. You have to book.
I mean, the food at number 6 is at a level that... I mean, I've not been to the Fat Duck in Bray, Heston Blumenthal's place, but it is superior to almost anything I've had elsewhere. It's proper event dining.
Now, where else do you love in Cornwall?
Malcolm Barnicart's steak and salt and pasty.
Oh.
Absolutely. For me, the nonpareil of pasties. It's not a traditional pasty, and of which there are several good ones, but the steak and Stilton, absolutely. It's a sort of a flaky... the short crust pasties, the flaky pastry pasties. This is a flaky, and it works fantastically well. Chuffs used to do a steak and Stilton, but they now do it with a Cornish Blue, but Cornish Blue has a different texture. Doesn't work
We've
as well.
We've got, I think... the biggest foodie we've had. I mean, you're as obsessed about things as this.
We like that.
I'm loving this, and now I'm terrified that my folded eggs are going to go to shit.
What do you eat when you're cycling? What's your fuel? You don't have an electric bike, so it's all Andrew's.
Whatever you can get your hands on, to be honest. It doesn't matter what you eat, because it depends what sort of cycling you're doing. But
so do you build up for a big cycle ride, like lots of pasta, like you're doing
No, generally the rule is that you kind of eat normally. I mean, you want a certain sort of protein bias to a degree and carbs at certain points, but you know, we're not elite athletes. So generally you eat whilst you ride. The idea, so you can keep your energy levels up, is to eat regularly whilst you're riding, really, which is what the pros do, you know, and they
eat while they're on the bike.
Yeah, it's a drag.
Jesus.
Most of the stuff that you eat is very, very sweet, because you need the fuel. That there's no way around it. That immediate sugar conversion to energy, you need that. So
see,
you end
clearly
up
I know nothing about exercise and conversion of because that wouldn't be my
you do get sick of it.
And do you wear shorts?
Yes.
No, well, the one I kind of imagined you walking in your Wham shorts today, but you didn't. You walked in trousers looking perfectly normal. Who chose all those outfits? Was that you?
Largely, they were. They developed from our sort of
what we wore when you were clubbing.
Yeah, I mean, we only had a couple of outfits between us, probably three, maybe four outfits at the most, and we rotated the clothes initially. I had a shirt. A black and white shirt, which appears in several shots, and George has it on as well. And his string vest, which I wore on a couple of shots. We had that.
But didn't everybody want you to wear their clothes? So the Choose Love.
Yeah, that was Catherine Hamner.
And that stayed, that...
Well, we appropriated the big letters on the white T-shirts for Choose Wham. But it was a Catherine Hamnett design, the Choose Life thing. But we thought it was an appropriate.
Did you know her?
No, didn't really know any fashion people.
So you used to. So when you were young, and you were friends from school, and you used to go clubbing.
Yeah.
A lot. Where did you go?
We went all over. We used to go into the West End. We used to go to the Beetroot. And we used to go to Mud Club.
Where was Beetroot?
Beetroot was on Greek Street, I think.
Okay.
But initially, when we were younger, we were sort of 16, 17, we used to come up to town and used to go to any old dive and just go disco dancing. We used to go to Harrow and we used to go... But then when I met Shirley, or rather when Shirley and I started stepping out together, which was... I met her she'd gone to the same school... So I knew of Shirley. She was in the year above. Anyway, when we started stepping out, we used to go to Bogart's. Because they had a sort of New Romantic night on a Tuesday where they played sort of alternative. Because at that point in time, disco kind of petered out, and there was this sort of funny lull where there was it was Shalimar and sort of not really the sort of disco dance stuff that I like, nor George. Night. And so we'd go to Bogart's, we'd go to various places. New Penny in Watford had a Monday was the new romantic night. So and they played things like Blue Rondo à la Turk and more esoteric, perhaps the avant-garde side of dance. And, you know, at that point in time, that whole scene that had been born really out of punk, an alternative scene, the new wave, and then it was an evolution of new wave. Bands like Haircut, Blue Rondo, Spandau, all sort of came about in that late...
So who are your biggest influences?
Well, musically, really, Jörg and I bonded over Elton John. So, but we had really wide and Catholic taste in music. He never admitted it, but we were fans of Genesis. We went to see Genesis at Earl's Court in 78 and at Nebworth.
I don't know how folded they are, but I attempted the fold.
They're very folded.
Okay, and then we've got...
I can see folds.
Okay, great. Okay, good. There's some slow-roasted tomatoes with a bit of oregano and parmesan.
Donny, just need to spin.
I say. Well, I'm gonna have a little taste.
Nice.
There's some toast.
Very nice eggs.
Okay, good.
What are you doing at the moment?
Well,
you're busy.
Yeah, very busy with promoting the Echoes from the Edge of Heaven singles collection and the Netflix documentary. And also in developing further legacy projects. So
Abba Voyage, you're going to do a Wham Voyage?
That would be brilliant.
I think that's going to be the way that all legacy goes, in actual fact. I think the... advances in technology. I mean, I meant to see. Have you seen it, Jessie?
Yeah, I loved it.
Oh my god!
It's mind blowing, isn't it?
Would it be helpful because you could do your own dance moves and stuff? Right.
I'm sure there are others that do it better.
But you can't not believe that they're there.
You cannot convince yourself otherwise.
No.
I absolutely thought I was watching ABBA.
Yeah, this is delicious, Jessie.
Really right. Delicious.
Oh, thank God for that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I want to know about what was fueling those mad Wham days, food-wise. What were you eating or drinking? Because you were massive stars. Probably you could ask for whatever you wanted. What was on the rider? What were you eating after a big, sweaty gig?
We always beat a hasty retreat from gigs. Jörg didn't like to stick around.
Why didn't he like to stick around? Because it was just so crazy outside, or...?
Yeah, I think to have to go through the scrum and spend God knows how long signing autographs and whatnot was not something that he wanted to do after a show. So, because, you know, you can end up being there for God knows how long. So the rider, we'd have a little bite prior, with, you know, with the tour catering. Mm-hmm. And we ate whatever they gave us.
Really?
Mm.
So you were just, like, the easiest to work with?
Yeah, I was.
tell me more.
You know, Jörg's legendary stints with the hairdryer are a stuff of legend indeed. So much so, there were times where you could smell the burning hair as he tried to get it as straight as possible. Jong's dad was a restaurateur, and I remember we'd go round there after school on occasion. It was the Angus Pride in Edgware, and I'd never had a steak. It was at Jack's, the first time I ever had steak when I was 16.
Was it a great steak?
It was a good steak. It was a bit of a revelation because, in fact, we never had beef. We had pork and chicken at home and lamb because it was cheaper. But my mum was a good cook.
What was she cooking for you? Or what were you requesting?
Well, no, in those days, you didn't request anything. No, you got what you were given.
Yeah.
And you ate it. And then you wish you had some more. But because Dad was brought up in Alexandria, he had a palate that... So we had Middle Eastern... Mum would cook Middle Eastern stuff. She'd do tagine, she'd do falafel occasionally. So we developed a pretty rounded palate because you didn't have any choice because you ate what was cooked. Mm-hmm. The only thing I never liked was Stovies on a Monday, which was cold roast lamb with onions and boiled potatoes, sort of cut up, and really didn't like cold lamb at all.
I get you with the cold lamb because it's the fat that kind of comes around it and it all looks really sad and it's quite kind of powdery. And
it's not a good cold meat.
No.
Yeah, you never get cold lamb sandwiches, do you?
No.
No.
It doesn't work. So
that was your Monday.
Stovies on a Monday.
Stovies?
It's a Scottish dish.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah,
okay.
Called Stovies. And it was, yeah, basically rough sort of cut potatoes and onions served with
yesterday's
lamb. Yeah. And then Sunday it would always be pilchards on toast.
Did you like that?
I liked it apart from the bone. You know, the bone that you had to... You could eat the bone, but I was never keen on that bone, so...
George's dad had a steak restaurant, but were you eating lots of Greek food when you were going round to his house?
Yeah, there was quite a bit of Greek food. So my first experience of tarama salata and hummus, dolmades.
I wanted to know, if you were going to cook for us, would you be doing the saffron risotto?
Probably, yes.
I think I'd like that.
Yeah. I really would like that.
So
will you give me the recipe?
I will.
Do you feel funny about it? Are you conflicted with that, or is it like your special...
Did you hear he hesitated?
He hesitated.
There was a hesitation there.
You did hesitate.
There was a hesitation. Yes, but the answer is yes, because I had to think, it's not my recipe. I am merely a steward. So, yes, of course.
We won't tell anyone.
No. Good.
So, your Last Supper. You're going to have your Last Supper. You've got a starter, a main, a pudding, and a drink of choice. What's going to go in that Last Supper?
What would it be? I think, so I'm allowing myself an amuse-bouche because I am.
You can eat the whole day if you want.
Oh, really?
We had someone that ate the whole day.
Do what you like.
You're not going to eat for 6 months nicely.
Ever. He's not going to eat ever again.
Would it start with that cold toast marmalade?
It would. It would definitely start with that. Mariage Frere, Imperial Earl Grey, 2 cups, light infusion.
Which make?
Mariage Frere. But
I've got it. Apologise.
It's only because that's the nearest place to me. So, but Fortnum is another purveyors of fine tea. But I'm sure we'd do an equally good one. So that, yes, with my 2 pieces of toast, one, butter, sea salt, the other, Frank Cooper's Oxford marmalade.
The butter and sea salt.
Yeah, and then Frank Cooper's Oxford marmalade. Or, actually, Wilkins and Son do a very... The tawny marmalade is exceptional. Then...
Yeah.
Elevenses.
Yeah, you love an Elevenses. I love this.
I do. So my Eletta, my DeLonghi Eletta cappuccino.
Yeah.
Just, and you know, I get that coffee's... Everyone loves coffee, but Italian coffee is the only coffee worth drinking. I hate to say it, but UK roasters don't come close.
What about like Australian coffee places like All Press? Do you not like their cappuccino? You're giving such a dirty... I've never seen you have such a dirty look on your face, Andrew, to be honest.
No,
strictly it's, Italian.
It's Lavazza.
You like Lavazza?
Lavazza, top class. They're top class bean. I'd say if you're going...
You're losing me, Andrew. You're losing me. Lavazza? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Gianluigi... Is it Gianluigi... Or Gianluca Lavazza, 18, whatever, 86. They know what they're doing.
Are you a Virgo?
No, my dad was.
What are you?
Aquarius. Just you're not doing bloody star signs now.
I don't know, I'm just trying to understand Andrew's method and his like obsession with...
It's personality. No, I'm an Aquarius, darling. I'm an Aquarius, apparently.
So no, okay, this, anyway, this so, cappuccino.
Yeah, so Lavazza top class. So top class is a really good all-round mix, great... espresso and also fantastic cappuccino.
When you're in Soho, where do you go for your
Cafe Italia?
Yeah,
Bar Italia.
We just had someone last
do you
week.
And do you think
the
they
place.
Serve barista coffee? No, they serve Italian coffee.
But I love this. You live in Central London, don't you? When you're here,
yes, I have a place in Central. London.
How fun!
Yeah, it is great
for food as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So, like, where when you're not in Cornwall and you're here in Central London, where's your first port of call?
Bocca di Lupo.
Oh, you okay? Fine. What's the order?
So we're going on to, aren't we? Lunch.
We haven't quite
finished 11s.
Okay, sorry. Go on.
With my 11s, I will have to have some form of donut. So, okay. So the Marks and Sparks yum yum.
Oh, they my are really God. Good.
That. That would be my sort of donut affair of choice to go with my cappuccino.
Do you keep them in the house, yum yums?
Yes.
And can you manage just one?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And that will last you a week then? Because it's usually four in a pack.
Yeah. So I may not have 11s every day, depends what I'm doing. But yes, I will endeavour to. Only one.
Have you done any exercise in between your toast and your yum yum?
He's got to walk to M&S to get the yum yum.
Generally I train in the afternoons. So,
you train? You call it training?
Yeah.
It's training, Mum. Mum, how long was the bike ride that you just did?
How long was it?
10 days and 1,000 miles.
Shit.
It was John O'Groats to Land's End, and it was pretty brutal at times. We had some shocking weather.
What was it? Were you raising money for charity?
Yeah.
Which charity?
Papyrus. The prevention of suicide in young people. I have a friend whose daughter unfortunately took her own life in November 21. She was 17. So Ben joined me, and it was conceived originally as my birthday beano, my 60th birthday beano, and he asked if we could attach a fundraising element to it, which of course I couldn't say no to, and wouldn't have wanted to either. So we've raised nearly 25k. From a target of 10. Yeah. So
well, we better make a donation later.
Oh, well, you're very kind.
Yeah, definitely.
You're very kind indeed. It you know, for Ben, certainly, it gave it a real purpose. And I trained a lot with Benji. He's a very good friend of mine. And I started training January the 1st, and most of the guys took it very, very seriously, because it was...
Well, I think you'd have to, otherwise you wouldn't be able to do it.
No, that's true. That is absolutely true.
You need stamina for that.
Yeah, and for chaps our age, I mean, there's some younger chaps, I think the record for doing it is something ridiculous, like 38 hours. God knows how you do that.
38
but
hours?
Ours was not the quickest route. I wanted to take in the scenic route.
But you're still doing 100 miles a day.
Yeah, roundabout.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Keep on talking about your last supper.
You've had a coffee and a yum-yum at 11s.
Yeah, I have. And then, as it's my last supper...
You're just going to have one yum-yum or two?
Yeah, no, one. I don't want to spoil my lunch.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. I will have a pint of Harvey's Sussex Best... at the Harp, Chandler's Place.
Okay.
Prior to my lunch.
And I was. What did I just miss?
Sussex Best, darling.
Harvey's.
What is that? Don't even
Harvey's
know what.
What's Harvey's?
What is it?
Is it cider or beer? Oh my God.
What is it?
It's coffee.
It's.
No.
Nectar from the gods. Is it a drink?
Yes.
It's nectar from the gods.
Yeah,
okay.
What is it?
It's a beer. England's finest example of a best bitter.
Okay.
And it is Harvey's have brewed for centuries. And it's one of the very well-established breweries, of which there aren't so many left.
Would you describe this as a craft beer?
No.
I know
no,
nothing this about
is,
beer.
This is
just...
ale of Old Albion.
Okay, so you're going to be there with your, like, kind of tanker... What's it? What are they called? Like
tankard.
Tankard, yeah.
Yeah, sort of, but okay. No, it'll be a straight glass.
Fine,
like,
okay. Yeah, so you're like, having that.
So I'm going to have that prior to my lunch. And I think I will lunch at... I think I'm going to lunch at Wilton's.
Wilton's?
Yeah. At Wilton's, or I'll get my chum Mark to do lunch at Brooks. Or maybe the Great Gallery.
Where's Brooks? I think we've just got a...
Wilton's, is that the music place?
No, Wilton, Wilton's on German Street.
I've never been.
Oh.
It's near... It's...
Oh. Neat. Yeah.
Maybe me and you will go.
It's very English, darling.
What are you going to eat there?
Silver sausage.
So at Wilton's, I will have smoked eel and horseradish to start, and then I will follow with the Colston Bassett Stilton Soufflé. That's right.
That sounds quite yummy.
And I will have a white Burgundy. As it's my last.
So you're going to...
Is
okay.
Brooks? Where is Brooks?
Brooks is a gentleman's club.
You're just with a load of blokes?
Yeah. So... But
I
Brooks
see
is,
you like that. Really.
Brooks, but I tell you why I like Brooks is it's very similar to in so far as you can have deviled kidneys for your lunch. You can have smoked eel.
Old school.
It's you know, traditional English, which you don't fare that you just don't get anywhere else. You can have lamb chops.
Do you like roast beef and Yorkshire pudding?
Oh yes.
Me too.
But hang on, I just feel like deviled kidneys. That's going in your last supper as a kind of thing? Is that like something that you pine after? Or you just want it as your last thing?
I really like devil kidneys. I used to make devil kidneys myself, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
They're not difficult to make.
No, they're not. They're dead easy. But
you've got to like kidneys.
Yeah, I love that would lamb's be the kidneys. Thing. Love them. So Brooks does all those things. And it has savouries. So, you know, so after you've eaten your meal, you can have... Welsh rarebit, or you can have sausages for your afters. It's brilliant.
Before sausages you have, for afters.
Yeah. So in between.
So you don't have a sweet. You
do you have a sweet tooth?
Yeah, yeah, I do. But
you've had your yum yum at 11. That's satisfied.
Well, I probably would. I have something after. Probably not at lunch. I'd probably save that for my teases.
Okay, what's your teases? Oh my God, Andrew, I love this.
Tea at 4.
No, it wouldn't be a cup of tea. Actually, I probably wouldn't have a hot drink at 4.
Oh.
Or I might have a little espresso and a piece of Malcolm Barnicot's Bakewell tart. That's probably what I'd have. Or as it's my last.
Yeah.
As it's my, I will have a crumpet slathered in butter.
Yeah.
And strawberry jam, Boddington's. Strawberry jam. So Boddington's Cornwall, they have I don't know, like 99 grams of strawberries in 100 grams. It's the most sensational. I might actually, as it's my last, have a little half a crumpet and a scone.
Just have a full crumpet and a full scone, Andrew.
He's
gonna
not
die.
Gonna fit his supper in. Are you stupid?
You're gonna die.
I say go for it.
Thank Christ he didn't eat all this when he was in Whammy. Wouldn't you be able to move? There'd have been no dancing. He would have just been like...
I might go halves. I couldn't eat a whole scone and a whole... So, and I have got dinner.
Okay.
So now we're getting to dinner.
So supper.
This is really meticulous. This is kind of...
It's my last meal.
No, I know, but like... I mean this is like... It's so specific. Like I like it.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had this precision in our 5 years.
My last meal will be
at
Bocca di Lupo.
Okay.
And it kicks off with the sage leaf stuffed with anchovy.
Oh, yes.
But are you having an aperitivo?
Yes, they do a very nice vermouth, actually, a white vermouth.
With?
Which is a lemony, it's herbaceous like they all are. But I do...
Just neat vermouth, not with a drop of
little ice and it'll have a tiny, just a twist of lemon.
Yeah. But you don't go for a full martini then?
No, I wouldn't. I'd have that. I'd have the vermouth, and then I'd have a nice glass of probably Frescobaldi, Pomino Bianco, which is a sort of Burgundy style Italian Chardonnay. And they also do the stuffed olive, which is a minced pork and veal and parmesan and chopped olives.
Jesus.
Breaded. And, oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you want me to take you there as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I want to be one of your new ex-girlfriends. That's what I want. Seeing as you have such good relationships with all of them, they go in your hand, I can be your eating partner ex-girlfriend.
I'm dining there tonight with Shirley and Pepsi.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, and then I will probably follow that up with, they have there's a form, what's the pasta called? Oh, it's a little twist.
Trophy. I had it in...
Trophy.
Oh, I love that.
With green beans, potato, and parmesan or pesto. That,
yum.
And they do, what's nice about BDL is they do small plates. So you can have a couple without, and share, because I will be dining with a companion.
So tonight...
Is that a premi patty? Piatti?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it would be.
And then for your main dish, your secondi? Or secondo?
Yeah. Probably, they do the sweetbreads. They do grilled sweetbreads with artichoke.
Maybe I would try it with you. Yeah. Is it delish?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's your last supper,
Yes, sweetbreads are delicious. But they change the menu virtually daily, so there could be things that, as and when, or should...
Andrew, do you have your own table there? When you walk in, they say...
I do have a spot that, yeah, that I like.
Signor, Signor Ridgely, come over. Would you have a pudding?
Yes, I would ask... them to make. So when I first used to go, I can't remember the barman's name, but he makes a sgroppino, which is lemon sorbet that is sort of whipped up with vodka, but I like it with gin as well, and grated lemon zest. That
delicious.
Gives it the lemon zest gives it that real perfumed the citrus oils are really intense. So it gives it an intensity that doesn't have unless you grate the zest in.
Have you ever been tempted to have your own restaurant?
I have been tempted. I did have a bar with some friends on occasion. We had a restaurant. We opened it the day that the markets crashed in 1990, I think. Oh,
so it didn't do well.
It didn't survive. It was actually in Rickmansworth.
Where's that?
It's north, darling.
Well, it's northwest.
Yeah. Is it Hertfordshire? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just outside the... Near Watford. Yeah, near Watford.
What was on the menu?
Well, they did very nice quenelles.
Quenelles?
The sort of like a fish mousse.
Oh, this is the 90s.
It's like minced fish, and then you kind of steam it.
Yeah.
And then
they're
serve
really
it with
nice.
An espume or something.
Yeah, like corretto,
sì. It's a bit like a filter fish.
Yeah, very nice. Yes, that's about the only one that I can remember.
I wanted to also know about that in the documentary. It talks about George coming out and sexuality, and around the time it wasn't really noticed in the he was on his own kind of journey of discovery and experiences, but the press were more obsessed with you at that time and what you were up to and your romances and kind of being a bit naughty. Was that on purpose? Did you kind of talk to each other and go, you know what, I'm going to go and be at the front centre of every tabloid and to detract from him when he was... Because I see you as a big brother to him. You were looking after him always. But was that ever a conversation or was it just complete?
Yeah, it was... And we did very, very little consciously. Except for the the songwriting and the decisions with regard to career and what we'd be doing next. Outside of that, we didn't consider celebrity or the fame aspect as something that we either cared about, would utilise to enhance us as individuals. So, let's say personalities, celebrities, blah blah blah. It was just a consequence. It was a byproduct of what we did. And so, and because I was, I had fairly glamorous girlfriends here and there, and I was And you know, George, because of his sexuality, you know, he was rather more discreet, and the places he went to weren't the sorts of places where you had paparazzi press.
Well, but he didn't know when he was gay. When did you know he was gay?
Well, I think he came to realization fairly early on, insofar as his late teenage years, really when he realised that he wasn't bi, but he actually was, you know, he preferred men. But it took him a little while to come to the decision to tell Shirley and I, me.
But did you know?
No, I didn't. And because we had girlfriends, and I knew he had, you know, girlfriends here and there, and so it wasn't something that I was aware of. Mm-hmm. He did keep it very private. Yeah. So when it came to the, you know, the press in general, because I was out and about and with girlfriends and rather poorly behaved on occasion, that was meat and drink to them. So they loved that.
Yeah, poorly behaved, what, you got drunk?
Yes.
I can't imagine you being ever, you know, squaring up to a paparazzi. It was just that you were having fun.
Yeah.
You were a young gun, having
fun. You
were
really cheeky.
I did not... the press and I had a very antagonistic relationship.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes. I didn't care for celebrity or fame. It was nothing that I'd ever aspired to. The only thing I ever wanted to do was to be in a band, make records, and perform. And so the rest of it was just noise. And famously, there was an occasion where I think Jog and I'm sure it was Jog. We were at a club, and as we when we exited, the photographers turned their backs on us, and I thought, magnificent, I've won. And I remember Piers Morgan, he told the story that's when my celebrity ended, which of course, absolute arrant nonsense. But for me, that was a real win. You know, that they thought that I cared a jot about having my physog in the...
Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it? Lots of people do music to be famous, and you did music to do music.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
if you think of some of the like X Factor or Pop Idol, lots of people go
on there.
I'm
sure some have.
They don't really sing, and they become famous.
Also, people feel like they need to seek press for validation to be relevant. All of that, I find it really refreshing that you were completely disinterested in that. And also, I think you say the most brilliant thing when you're doing that interview. And some of the press were so rude to you too. Even like, God rest her soul, Paul Yates calling you the mate. Like, and you're about to go and do a sold out stadium farewell show, and you laugh it off so brilliantly. But also, but then when you say, I'm going to go out like with Grace, you say, I'm going to, and I just felt, and you really have. I
was going to say the same thing.
Is it because you just felt like you could never reach that height of not fame, but success again? So you were just like, you know what? I've had a really good time with my best friend.
Yeah, it was largely that, you know, I'd achieved the only ambition that I ever held. And that was to be in a band with George, with my best friend, make records, and be a success, you know, make it the biggest. And so, obviously, it was an ambition realised early in life, but I genuinely didn't have any other ambitions. I wanted to step away from the limelight, because it was very intrusive. At that point in time, I had a very attractive girlfriend, and the press scrutiny had got even more intense. And I just wanted to remove myself from that. So I lived abroad, and I didn't really have any other ambition or aspiration in music. I think what I probably should have done was knuckled down and after a little hiatus and perhaps written more songs.
Songwriting for other people as well, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, but that wasn't something that I felt that necessarily I would be an option for me. So I stepped back and life sort of took over in other ways, just generally speaking. I moved my girlfriend at the time. We lived in Monaco for a short while. And then we moved to the States so she could pursue her career. So that took me into the late 80s, and then I came back and I recorded the solo album, which I didn't really want to do. I wanted to record a single, test the water, but the industry had changed. Sony needed an album, so I had to spend 18 months writing and recording an album, which was a bit ill-judged, to be honest. I think the style wasn't the right style for me to have chosen at that point, but I think it was a bit of a no-win situation. If I tried to replicate a Wham sound, I'd have probably got no thanks for that either. So.
And also George is doing very well, and then it becomes, you become pitted against each other, and it kind of feels...
Oh, well, I suppose it could have been that, but...
But I think, besides the friendship, but it was just your absolute loyalty to your friend... And your...
And generosity.
And generosity, like, and that you celebrated success and kind of promoted it and cherished it. And the I just felt that was the grace for me, that you accepted... I mean, he was an extraordinary talent, and his songwriting and everything. But the fact that you just were there and you supported it.
Yeah, but...
And you didn't say, oh, well,
I don't know many
me?
Musicians that have reached that level of success that would be able to do it as beautifully as you did it, Andrew.
Well, I agree.
That's kind of easy to say, but, he was my best friend. And, he was equally as generous with me in many ways. And, the affection with which we held each other was a genuine one and endured. And I could only, it's not in me to be resentful, not of him. And I was, from when it became apparent that his talent was really developing and that it was a talent of proportion, exceptional proportions, which was fairly early on, really, when he wrote Young Guns on the back of the failure of Wham Rap to be a hit first time round. We didn't have... We had a couple of other tracks that we were working on, but nothing of that quality. And he literally pulled that out of the bag, and that was a moment of, wow, this is slightly different gravy. And then he did the same with Bad Boys, which he hated because he felt compelled to write, to follow up on the success of Young Guns. It was formulaic. He didn't... It's a really good track. It's really well produced, but the sentiment was somewhat inauthentic and contrived, and he hated that. He hated that aspect of it not being authentic. But then Club Trop, which we knew we couldn't release initially. When we released the album, that was the single that came out with the album, and with the video, it just liberated. It liberated, as I said in Netflix, it liberated pure Wham. From that point, it was like, we're not doing this silly rebels without a cause, a clue, and we were able to just be ourselves far more. And at that point, we were far more comfortable in our presentation and our image, and that became definitive, well, pure Wham, really, and allowed us to sort of move on without any encumbrance.
On that last show, the final show, was there any moment in that show where you were like, oh, I could do this again? Or were you very much like, you know what, thanks for the good times, see you later?
No, I always wanted to. I love performing. Mm. Yeah, it's where we formed our school band, and you write songs and you perform them. Mm. Maybe you'll get enough money together to record a demo. Mm. Maybe, God willing, you get a record deal. So, but you start off writing and performing. And that, I don't think that ever changes. That's what is core and central to it. And so, I I'm a record as saying that I wish we had toured that last show and given our fans the opportunity globally to bid them farewell. But I also understood Jörg's point that there could only be one final concert.
Well, Elton John's kind of proved that otherwise. 330 farewells, but yeah.
You would have both been 60 now. Because I remember Elton mentioned in his performance at Glastonbury that was George's birthday.
Yeah, 25th.
He was performing, yeah. Did you miss him?
Oh, of course. Yeah. One misses any friend. I mean, I've been very fortunate. I haven't lost many friends, many of my peers. Andy Lever died. He was in our first school band. He died tragically young. One or two others. But, no one with whom I had such a close bond with. And so, yeah, there are moments, of course, that you wish that you could be doing things together or whatever it may be. So, yeah, he's missed it by a lot of people in a variety of different ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's when you, especially he and I having such a close bond, that sort of bond you only really form at school when you're immersed in each other every day in such an intense sort of way. You know, you're learning together, you're playing together, you are wholly immersed in each other. And we were, and that was, and you don't get the chance to do that later in life, really. I mean, you do perhaps with your wife or when you're courting.
There's something very special about those school relationships.
Yeah, 100%.
Can I ask you, it may be too hard to answer, but is there one nostalgic taste or smell that can bring you back to those Wham days immediately?
Well, funnily enough, there would be two, in actual fact, because when our first kind of taste of life, as it might be, as wealthy, urbane, sophisticated people, our publishers, Dick Leahy and Brian Morrison, two giants of the music publishing industry at the time, and our mentors in many ways, they took Jörg and I to Langan's in early 83.
The hotel?
No, Langan's.
Okay, where's Langan's that?
Langan's Brasserie.
Is it still there?
Yeah. It's opposite Green Park Tube Station.
So you went there?
Yeah. So that was a proper sort of celeb haunt in the early 80s, and it had a great atmosphere. It was really really sort of louche but stylish, sophisticated atmosphere. And Langan's, it still does a spinach souffle with anchovy sauce, and Brian, who was a real bon vivant, Brian Morrison, he suggested that we try that, and that was a real wow moment. This is the way that one would like to live.
You said you had two memories.
Yes, and the other one, so that was a kind of my food moment in many ways, following on from my steak moment at the Angus Pride.
Angus Pride.
When we were shooting the video, or prior to the shoot of the video for Club Tropicana, when we were staying in Pike's Hotel, Simon Napier-Bell, who is still alive and well. I saw him when I was in Thailand earlier this year.
He
was our manager, yeah, and extremely urbane and sophisticated bon vivant. And Simon lived very, very well. And we were dining at Pike's, and they had a dining room which was actually on the roof. It was a roof terrace, and he ordered a white Rioja, the Marques de Murrieta white Rioja, and white Rioja is a fantastic wine, especially the Marques de Murrieta, this particular, and it was an absolute epiphanal moment. It's like, oh wow, this is proper wine. And so, yeah, that moment. So they are my sort of two food and drink moments, formative. And yes, I still absolutely loved that white Rioja.
What was the cocktail on Club Tropicana?
The cocktail. I think it was coloured water, to be honest. Okay. Yeah, because it got poured into the swimming pool.
But you surely were drinking on the job for that video.
Yes, there was in actual fact a really attractive barmaid.
Oh, fancy that. So the attractive barmaid, do you remember what she was making you?
Not really, no. I wasn't really
looking
at the drinks.
You were looking into her eyes.
I was looking at a bikini, to be honest.
But, yeah, but despite your reputation, it never puts the women off, Andrew, does it?
It hadn't seemed to so far.
And on that note, enjoy your dinner with your ex-girlfriend tonight. It's been a pleasure to have you, Andrew. Thank you so much for all your wonderful stories. I found it all so fascinating, and I implore everyone to go and watch the documentary. Information given to me about particular
food and drink.
Yeah,
very precise.
Exactly.
But he looks very precise, Jesse. He's very, very neat.
Yeah,
and very.
The way he eats is neat.
Yeah.
The way he like butters his toast.
Very neat.
The way he eats his toast. It's also quite not dainty.
It's
the
kind
wrong
of
word.
There's a symmetry about Andrew Ridgeley.
It's quite measured.
Yeah, he was very polite and lovely, and I've learnt a lot about food now.
I know.
Yeah.
You're going to go for those deviled kidneys?
No, not. I might go for the stuffed olive.
Yes, defo.
I'd like to go for that. And I'd like that white wine that he drank, that seminal moment of white Rioja.
I don't think I've ever had a white Rioja.
No.
I really love chatting to him. I loved hearing his stories. I mean, I've seen the documentary. We've seen it. And that was so warm and generous. And he just is...
He's a gracious man.
Yeah. I just find it really funny that they have to leave a venue straight away to avoid the hordes of screaming fans. And now he's getting the bus to the house and probably not getting bothered at all. And he quite likes it that way, right? He has a life that isn't...
I don't think he ever did want the celebrity. He wanted to put the music, didn't he? That's what he said.
Yeah.
That was not the thing that he ever wanted. And he walked away from that.
That makes him so cool.
Yeah, very.
Very cool. Andrew Ridgeley, thank you so much for coming on. The Wham! Documentary is out on Netflix now. The Wham! Limited Edition box set, Echoes of Heaven, is out now. It is so good. Again, so considered and nostalgic and brilliant.
And well thought out.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. You're not going to want to miss next week's episode.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.